Have mercy. Thank you so much. As soon as Sabine began to sing, my mind flashed back to Seminary Chapel. I was sitting right up there. Just down the row from me was my friend Booker T. Cornish. There was somebody, Sabine, who sang that day who was almost as good as you. And when that person finished singing, this chapel erupted. And I still remember Booker sitting beside me calling out, "Church dismissed." And I remember that preacher toddling up to this pulpit and me thinking, "Well, you'd better be good. You let me know when you're coming to Loma Linda, because you blessed my soul today." Years ago, there was a commercial on television. For those of you who are seminary students, television is a kind of rectangular box that has moving images and voices. There was a commercial on television for Visa charge cards. It started out with the camera taking in the room beneath it. You saw the room there, the living room, the couch, the coffee table. And then the camera began to back away. And as it backed away, it began to spin. Soon you not only saw the room, but you saw the house. And then the yard. And as it pulled away, it moved more quickly. The neighborhood, the city, the county, the state, soon you saw the continent, and finally the entire picture disappeared into the glow that graced the face of the Visa charge card. I remember the commercial well. I don't remember what it was about. I don't remember what its message was. Something like, with Visa card all over the world, no matter where you go, you can still get in debt. Something like that. I don't remember their specific message, but I do remember the impression it left with me. The impression it left with me was my life, if you back away far enough, soon disappears into a mass of other people and simply doesn't matter. If you back away far enough, we all blend in together and I no longer count. Have you ever had that experience, that feeling that you simply don't matter, that you are the background to the people's lives who do count? When my wife and I were about to get married, we were both living in Austin, Texas. I went downtown Austin to pick her up one noon day for lunch. We walked down 6th Street looking for a place to eat when we noticed up ahead down the street there was a lot of commotion, a lot of activity. Well, we're the curious types, and so we walked down 2 or 3 blocks to find out exactly what was happening. Come to find out, they were filming a major Hollywood movie. There were large trucks, lights, camera, there was all kinds of action. They were about to film a scene, and so we pressed through the crowd until we were standing literally right up on the curve, right by where they were going to film the scene. I squeezed in between a blonde-headed woman on one side and Anita, my beloved, on the other. And we stood there, shoulder to shoulder, interested what was going to happen. And then somebody called out, "Action!" And as soon as they called out action, that blonde-haired woman to my left ran into the scene, and I realized she was the star. You might recognize her name, Kim Basinger. There I stood, squeezed between Anita on one side and Kim Basinger on the other. Who says there's no God? But it does leave me wondering, do you think somewhere in the world today, Kim Basinger is telling someone, "Can I tell you about the time I stood shoulder to shoulder with Randy Roberts?" Can I tell you about that? If you wonder that, don't, because she's not. Because I was merely background. Just background. I wasn't even an extra. Have you ever had that experience? You feel like others are the stars, you're the extra. Others are on center stage, you're in the wings. Others are in the headlines, and you're in the footnotes. Have you ever had that experience, feeling like I just blend into the crowd, I don't matter, I don't count? Maybe you've had the experience like the cartoon I saw. It showed two penguins standing, talking with one another on a promontory point of ice. Stretched out in front of them was a sea of identical-looking penguins. They were talking to each other. One of them says to the other, "You know what we need around here? What we need around here are some name tags." Have you ever had that experience? I don't matter. I don't count. Nobody cares. Well, if you've had that experience, Jesus has an important word for you. You may have tried to cope with it yourself, find some way to make a difference. Kind of like the humorist, he said, "I was sitting in an outdoor patio at a restaurant. There were many people eating. A beautiful day, an ideal environment for a summer lunch. But I was seated alone, and as I got to looking around, I looked at all the people. Every other table had two or three or four people gathered, talking, laughing, and I ate alone." He said, "It suddenly struck me that when they got up and walked away from that place, there wasn't a single person present who would remember I had even been there. I was just background." And so he said, "I stood up, pushed out my chair, stood up on the chair, stretched out my arms, and shouted out, 'I am not background.' They'll remember me now," he said, "when I leave that place." Maybe you've wanted to do that. Wanted to have that sense, I matter, I count, I'm not background. And yet even standing and stretching out your arms doesn't matter much. But what Jesus says does. So I invite you to take your Bibles, open them to the Gospel of Luke, the 15th chapter. We're working our way through these three gospel parables. Luke chapter 15, in the parable we read today, you will notice quickly that there is great similarity to the parable we considered yesterday. Some even go so far as to call them twin parables. Twin parables, because in both parable and both of the parables, each of the parables, something is lost, someone goes seeking, and that something is found. Each of the parables has sorrow, and yet each of the parables has joy. There's much similarity, although there are certain differences. Some have said the sheep probably wandered off on its own. The coin was lost by someone else. The sheep probably knew it was lost. The coin did not. And maybe most importantly of all, the sheep was lost out there. The coin was lost in here. So let's read what Jesus said. Luke, the 15th chapter, beginning with verse 1. "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.' Then Jesus told them this parable," verse 8, "Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin.' In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." It's an unbelievable story. It's not the kind of story that builds one's credibility. Come now, who would seek, who would search, who would sweep diligently until finding that coin? There are different estimates as to how much it might have been worth, but people seem to coalesce around a value of about 16 or 17 cents. Come on. Do you sweep diligently until you find 17 pennies? It's an incredible story. They don't matter. A coin, a drachma, doesn't matter. Let it go. Leave it alone. It doesn't count. Why are you seeking? Why are you searching? It's an incredible story. Now, if Jesus had said, the woman lost $70, that I can understand. That I would look for. But a coin? What are you talking about, Jesus? Maybe the meaning of the parable can be found in the ones to whom Jesus tells the story. You notice who is there. The opening verses of Luke 15 tell us who is there. The saints and the sinners are there. The tax collectors and the people of the land are there. The prostitutes and the preachers are there. Everybody is gathered there. Jesus is telling a story to a very mixed crowd of people. But if you pay special attention, you soon discover that he is telling the story most specifically to one group. He is telling the story to those who were muttering under their breath. Those who were muttering with lowered eyebrows and with furrowed foreheads. Those who were saying, "Why are these other people here?" Those were the primary ones to whom he spoke. And he spoke to them about a lost coin. Now, parables often have one point. Kind of like this story has as its focus one coin. Jesus takes that coin and he shows it to the religious people. And it's as though he says, I want you to read what's on the face of this coin. This coin that has very little value in the eyes of the world. Because there is a message, religious folk, to you on this coin. Had they taken the coin and looked at it, it would have said on its face, you matter to God. You matter to God. He's speaking to the religious types, those with whom he is sometimes very severe, with whom he is apparently unforgiving, from whom he holds no punches. He is speaking to them specifically, and he is telling them, there are people that are lost outside, and there are people that are lost inside. I want you who are so critical, who are standing there with your robes of self-righteousness wrapped tightly about yourselves, I want you to understand, first of all, that you matter to God. What about it, seminarian? You who spend much time in the study of this word for class, but may not spend much time in the study of this word for you. You matter to God. You who walk the hallways of this place uncertain about your final grade and uncertain about your final grade. You're standing with God. Where do I stand? I'm trying to learn all this stuff, and yet there are times when I'm not sure about my own stuff. The word of Jesus is, you matter to God. In fact, there is a quotation, I love these words and return to them not often enough, but frequently. They come from the pen of Ellen White in that masterful volume called Steps to Christ. Listen to these words. Take to him everything that perplexes the mind. Nothing is too great for him to bear, for he holds up worlds. He rules over all the affairs of the universe. Nothing that in any way concerns our peace is too small for him to notice. There is no chapter in our experience too dark for him to read. There is no perplexity too difficult to unravel. No calamity can befall the least of his children. No anxiety harass the soul. No joy cheer. No sincere prayer escape the lips, of which our Heavenly Father is unobservant, or in which He takes no immediate interest. The relations between God and each soul are as distinct and full. Are you listening? The relations between God and each soul are as distinct and full as though there were not another soul upon earth to share His watch care, not another soul for whom He gave his beloved son. I don't know, if asked, how you would summarize those words. I know how I would summarize them. I would summarize them by saying this: you matter to God. You count. God does not back away so far from your life and mine that our lives disappear into the mass of humanity only to no longer count. God has no extras waiting in the wings. You matter to God. You stand center stage, the object of his affection and grace. I did not fully capture the immensity of that grace and its specificity until I ran across something that stunned me. Stunned me so much that I had to go and ask two or three people who knew something about such things, about space and travel and astronomy. I did some reading and to find out, and I discovered it was indeed true. So let me ask you for a moment to take a journey with me. If it were possible to take a journey with me to mount the space shuttle, to blast off into space, and to take a journey, if it were possible, to the outer reaches of what we currently know as the universe, and then to get far enough back from the universe that we snapped a picture with our trusty iPhone. And then with that iPhone clutched tightly in our grip, we turn the space shuttle around and return to Earth. We have a very specific purpose in mind. We go to the Kodak store and we say, we would like to develop this, we would like to print this, but we have something special to ask. What we want to ask is that you print this photograph on a piece of paper the size of the United States. After they recover, they agree. Some months later, they have it ready, and it is rolled out all the way from Washington, D.C., all the way over to the left coast where I live, all the way from the valley in Texas, all the way to the Northland bordering Canada. It is rolled out, and there it lies. It doesn't take us long of walking around on this photograph to wonder, where are we? Where do we fit in? Do we matter in the vast immensity of space? And so we find an astronomer and we ask our question. And the astronomer says, with some time, I will find us. He comes back a week, 2 weeks later. He says, get in the car. And we get in and we begin to drive. And as we speed along across this photograph, there are worlds and suns and moons and galaxies flashing past on both sides. Where are we? He continues to drive. Drives all the way to the center of the universe, Berrien Springs, Michigan. Stops the car. Gets out of the car and begins to look. We're following every twist, every turn he makes as he searches. We follow. Finally, he arrives at a certain point and he kneels down. He says, come here. He kneels down. Get close. You better get on your knees. We looked to where he points, and right there he points. See that? Right there, he says, you see that dot the size of a pencil lead? That, he says, is our sun. Our world does not appear. It is too small. And yet, to that fleck of dust on the face of the universe came God. Wrapped his child in human flesh, stepped down the starry stair steps of the sky, with grace and love enveloped in humanity, gave him to us as a prized gift that forever will say to you and you and me, you matter to God. Jesus holds that coin for them. He shows them on its face. It says, you matter to God. Whether you stand in the dirt and the dust beside Jesus telling his tales, or whether you walk the hallways of the seminary, you matter to God. You, seminary student, who have wondered how you're going to make it financially. Your world feels that it's collapsing, it's caving in. God, I thought I was following you. What am I doing here? We're not going to make it. We're going to lose the house. I don't know how we'll do another quarter. Can I tell you this morning, you matter to God. Seminary student who walks these hallways, who studies these books, who listens to these professors, and yet is uncertain of your standing before God. Can I assure you, you matter to God. I can tell you firsthand, when I studied in these classrooms and walked these hallways, I was in a process where there was part of me that had never come under the lordship of Jesus Christ, part of me that was uncertain about my standing before God. I can remember sitting in this chapel right about the third row here and listening to Ivan Blazin lecture on Romans. And sitting there, being overwhelmed, asking myself, can it be true? Is it truly that simple? Being stirred to the core of my being with the stunning realization that I truly mattered to God. Look at Jesus as he tells the story. Because he has a word in it for you. 16 cents, maybe 17 on a good day. It doesn't matter. God comes seeking those who are lost inside the house as well as those who are lost out on the mountains. Rest assured, you matter to God. But a coin has two sides. The coin that the woman sought had two sides. Just like there were two groups in the audience that listened to Jesus speak. And so Jesus now takes that coin. That coin that he has showed to his religious friends who have been muttering under their breaths. He has showed it to them. You matter to God. Now he flips over the coin. He is still speaking to his religious friends, but now he is speaking not about them. Now he is speaking about the ones who are the focus of their ire. He turns the coin over and says, now I want you to read what's on this side. Because on this side of the coin it says, they matter to God. Not just you. Yes, you matter to God. And God will do anything in His power to bring you to Himself when you are in the church. But rest assured, God will do anything in His power to bring them to Himself who are outside of the church. Because they matter to God as well. Look at the scene. It's a scene in ancient Galilee. You peer inside the doorway of the dark, small house. You might even call it a hut. As you peer inside, you look and you see movement. You're trying to observe what it is that's happening. Is that the hard-packed floor of a Galilean house? Or are those the hard-packed trails that Jesus walked in Galilee? Is that a woman I see bending over, seeking and searching? Or is that God bending and reaching? That glint I see in the corner, is that the glint reflecting a coin? Or is that the gleam of hope in the eye of a lost soul? Is that a woman? Or is that God? It doesn't really matter. Because both are seeking, and both will seek until they find. Neither will give up. The woman will not sleep tonight until that coin is recovered, and God will not rest until He has reached every soul possible. Why? Simple. Because they matter to God. It's a realization, an understanding of that simple verity that I suppose is at the root of my love of the story. It's a story told by the sociologist and preacher Tony Campolo, my favorite story of his. Apocryphal, no doubt, but a story. You've heard Campolo. Someone asked him, did that really happen? He said, if it didn't, it should have. Campolo tells the tale. St. Peter and St. Paul at the gates of glory. They've been given a duty. They've been handed a list. You check who's on the list. Only allow in those whose names are here. And so they take their duty very seriously. They've got a list and they're checking it twice, trying to find out who's naughty or nice. Your name, in you come. You're not here, out you stay. Every evening, they go in, shut the gates, and enjoy the pleasures of the redeemed. But there's a fly in the ointment. Because time and again, once they are walking the golden streets, they encounter people they are absolutely certain they turned away that day. How did you get in here? They renew their efforts, become more careful, become more focused. Every day, checking the names. Every day, there are those in there he didn't let in. He didn't let in. How did they get in here? They begin to ask questions. No one has an answer. Until one day, somebody runs out and says, I found out what's happening. What's happening? How are they getting in? They said, it's simple. It's Jesus. He's pulling them over the back fence. And he's pulling them over because they matter to God. I suppose that's why William Templeton said it, maybe said it best when he said, the church is the only society that exists for the benefit of its non-members. We somehow have believed that it's all about us. And Jesus says, the truth is, it is about you. You matter to God, but a coin has two sides, so do they. They matter to God. It is easy to get caught up in what we do here and think that this is what counts. When we look outside the windows, only to realize that there is a world out there that is beloved by God. For God so loved the world. It's been almost 30 years. Hard to believe, but the years slip quickly into the rearview mirror. Almost 30 years, I was a student at Loma Linda University. October of that year, something stunning happened, something that turned the focus, the attention of the entire globe on that little hamlet called Loma Linda, California. Because into the chest of a little baby named Faye, Dr. Leonard Bailey placed the heart of a baboon. There was much interest, much focus, much attention, nightly newscasts all coming out of Loma Linda, questions, stories, jokes. Oh, the jokes went around. What's the fastest thing on two wheels? Baboon riding a bicycle through Loma Linda. They told the stories, they told the jokes, they told the tales. But in the midst of it all were people praying for a baby named Faye. And the hours passed, and the days passed. And then that heart and that baby stopped breathing and beating. I still remember gathering in the church where I am now privileged to serve as a pastor. I still remember gathering there for that memorial service for this tiny infant. And the crowds came. The church was filled to overflowing. And there was grave concern. The media was there in force. There was grave concern because there had been so many protesters pacing in front of the medical center, people protesting using the baboon heart. There was fear that they would burst into the sanctuary and disrupt the service. Police officers, sheriff's deputies, church deacons ready to help if there was any interruption. Jerry Davis, my boss at the time, delivered the homily. Jerry is the one who told me the story. He said, it was just before we were to begin. We were back in the green room getting ready for the service when one of the people in charge of security came back and tugged at my sleeve, said, Jerry, I think we have trouble. I walked away, said Jerry, and went with him. What's going on? Well, there's a group. There's a group out there. They don't belong. They don't fit. I'm afraid they're going to be a problem. Show me who they are. And so they walked out of the back into the front of the sanctuary and tried to look without looking. Where are they seated? Well, they're right over there. So you're talking about this side? Yes. Where are they? Well, about 10 rows back. He looked. Are they the ones wearing? Yes. And the ones wearing? Yeah, that's the ones. Don't fit, do they? And Jerry said, leave them alone. Let them be. That is Baby Faye's family. Strange, isn't it, how we can think it's all about us and that they don't belong. To those who thought it was all about them, Jesus assured them of God's love. You matter to God. But don't forget that a coin has two sides. So do they. In fact, they are to be the focus of your interest, of your prayers, of your work, because they matter to God. So what is Jesus saying? In this simple parable, a twin parable they call it, what is he saying? Not only to them, but to you and to me. Could it be that Jesus is saying simply this? It really doesn't matter whether you're a preacher or not, a religious person or not. It doesn't matter if you're a saint or a sinner. If you walk the hallways of the seminary or the streets of midnight Benton Harbor, it doesn't matter when it comes to this one powerful, pungent verity. And that verity is this: saint or sinner, preacher or prostitute, heads or tails, we are all on the coin God seeks, because we all matter to God.